Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm going to call the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. Today, we're going to hear four bills, three of them from the Division on Behavioral Health. And before we begin today, I just really want to thank all of our members and Chair Fisher for all of their work they've been doing this session in the behavioral health and substance abuse area. It's been bipartisan, and you've done a lot of work in the division on the bills, so it means less work for this committee. We really appreciate that. I know you may have had your last hearing today, but I know you're going to continue to work on several issues that are unresolved, and so we look forward to your continued work on those issues. So the first item today we'll talk about is appropriation bill, and then three bills from the Division on Behavioral Health. And then, members, I will give a brief overview of the next week or so of the committee, so you have it on your calendar when we wrap up the bills today. But first, let's do the roll call. Ms. Hansen, can you take the roll, please?
Yes, of course. Chair Schultz.
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Thank you. Lead Albright. I see you there, sir. You're present. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Burkle.
Present.
Good morning. Representative Good morning. Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Thank you. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Thanks. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Great. Representative Keel.
Present.
Good morning. Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Knorr.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny, present.
Thank you. Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Great. Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
And Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
We have a quorum, Chair Schultz. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Let's see, Representative Robbins, would you like to move the minutes from March 16th?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Moves the minutes from March 16th, 2021. Any discussion of the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the amendments are approved and the minutes are approved. Okay, members, let's see. The first item for consideration is House File 1600. Members, this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance bill. And Representative Ryer, the bill is before us. Welcome to the committee. Please tell us about House File 1600. And it looks like we have three testifiers on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we have two testifiers and one for questions, though that I may be out of date. So
okay.
We'll go with the flow.
Go ahead, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be here again and to introduce House File 1600. House File 1600 is a straightforward bill. It requests $6 million of annual increase to the base funding for Adult Mental Health Initiative, or AMHI, grants. AMHIs are regional collaboratives that work to build effective community-based mental health services and funding throughout the state. These initiatives were started as pilot projects after the closure of regional treatment centers in the early 1990s. At that point, the state encouraged counties and tribes to develop partnerships to plan for and deliver acute care and community-based mental health treatment for individuals who had been served by the state hospitals. AMHIs are rooted in bringing individuals with lived experience with mental illness together with providers, counties, tribes, managed care organizations, and DHS to fully utilize all available resources to uniquely meet regional needs. I don't need to tell this committee more about how this pandemic has affected the mental health of Minnesotans. That's why now is an appropriate time to consider increasing these important dollars that can be deployed regionally to respond to unique needs. With me today, I have Emily Shug, Deputy Director for Dakota County Social Services, and Lori Long from Stearns County. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Breyer. Going to our first testifier, Ms. Shug. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Good morning. I'm Emily Shug, the Deputy Director of Social Services with Dakota County, and I'm pleased to be here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Social Services Administrators, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Minnesota Intercounty Association, MICA. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House File 1600, and thanks to Representative Ryer for authorizing this very important legislation. This bill proposes an increase to the base allocation for adult mental health initiatives, or AMHI, grants. And as Representative Ryer said, as we continue to respond to and recover from the COVID pandemic, now is a critical time to invest in our mental health system, and specifically in the counties and the adult mental health initiatives, whose role it is to ensure that we have a locally available, affordable, and accessible network of services. So again, the need is great right now, and as you all know from what you're seeing, reading, experiencing, and hearing from your constituents, the need is growing and it is large. The pandemic has had a significant impact on the mental health of our state's residents and communities. County governments, tribal governments, and service providers are faced with the challenge of ensuring individuals are safe, healthy, and getting necessary care and treatment. And daily, we are seeing people who are experiencing greater complexity and acuity in their mental health and substance use disorder conditions and symptoms. The need and complexity is evidenced by increase in use of services at the crisis end of our continuum, such as emergency departments, law enforcement response, mental health crisis services, and civil commitment. Even when more people are vaccinated and some of the physical health risks of COVID subside, we know the mental health impact of COVID will be felt for many years to come. In terms of the county role in this process, the statute requires that counties are responsible for developing and coordinating a system of locally available and affordable mental health services. Each day, the counties, along with our system partners and tribal partners, are engaging with individuals living with mental illness and their loved ones to access care. Counties, tribal governments, and AMHIs play an important role in convening, planning, coordinating, and service delivery along the whole continuum, which ranges from prevention to early intervention, treatment, and recovery. We also, through our AMHIs, are really close to the service delivery system and can identify those emerging needs and service priorities and gaps. So again, our role is really along the continuum. Those services include education, outreach, arranging for transportation, housing, either delivering directly or making available services such as therapy, assertive community treatment, intensive residential services, crisis, case management, care coordination, peer support, medication management. And all of these services support people to live thriving lives in their community. And again, that's a very brief snapshot of a very complex system of care. Statewide, the Adult Mental Health Initiative, or AMHI, funding is critical to making this entire continuum of services available, affordable, and responsive to the needs of our residents. It funds uncompensated care and services that aren't covered by health insurance, provides support for housing, transportation, and other critical social determinants of health and well-being that allow individuals to engage in their treatment services and live in their communities. Overall, AMHI funding has been used to hold together and continue to innovate a fragile and fractured system. It's utilized to support many necessary services that otherwise would not be available or sustainable. And this network has proved absolutely critical, especially during this time of COVID. Now more than ever, counties, tribal governments, local partners need these resources at the front line to do this work. So what we're asking for today, House File 1600 starts to address this need for more resources by providing $6 million per year for the Adult Mental Health Initiative grants. Our goal is that each county and region will have adequate resources to provide a unique delivery system to those needing mental health services. We want to be able to meet the needs of all people experiencing mental health symptoms and crisis and be able to offer them the resources to engage in their recovery in their local communities. The funding provided in House File 1600 will help achieve this goal and better serve our communities. As mentioned by Representative Ryer, partnerships have been crucial during this COVID period. It will take a strong partnership between DHS, counties, health plans, regions, tribal governments, and our service providers to reach these goals. The AMHI is a proven effective collaborative structure and grant for addressing needs with innovative and community responsive approaches. So we thank Representative Ryer for her leadership on this important mental health issue, and thank you to the committee for this opportunity. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Shug. And we'll go to the next testifier and then open it up for questions. So the next testifier is Lori Long. Ms. Long, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and then proceed with your testimony. I believe you're muted, Ms. Long. There you go.
Okay, hi. Chair, committee members, my name is Lori Long. I live in St. Cloud, and I want to talk today about my local AMHI serving Benton, Sherburn, Stearns, and Wright County in central Minnesota. A little bit about me before I got sick, just to give you a feel for where I went. I had a career of over 20 years in nonprofit management. I created programs and ran those programs. I was happy. I had a full life, and I was a vibrant participant in the community. That nonprofit work included 5 years in children's mental health. I also was a real estate agent, and also, you'll know this word, I was a flipper. I was a talk radio host on our local talk radio station. And finally, I was elected and served 2 terms, which is 8 years, on our St. Cloud City Council. Then I slowly started to get sick. I was struggling with a very private illness in the public eye. I was one sick little puppy. I was desperate, but I got an amazing Stearns County social worker who helped me get locally funded initiative services, which made a huge difference in my life. I utilized the crisis adult services, including the hotline phone number, as well as the mobile team, which came to my house and brought me to the ER, which was much needed at the time. I've also utilized the county flex funds. I've used it for things such as getting my car fixed. In addition, I was awarded a one-time registration amount of money from Stearns County to attend a workshop that was focused on those struggling with the mental health disorder. And with my skills and my experience, they felt it would be a good, you know, spending of money. I was not included, mileage was not included, and I did have to bring back a report at that time. I've had a housing social worker who helped me stabilize my housing situation with my mortgage payments. They also provided a one-year stipend each month, which helped me get back on track with my mortgage. Finally, I've utilized supported employment. I had a job coach who helped me find appropriate work, supported me during that process, and I'm happy to say I've been there 3 years and I couldn't be happier. Another success story. Oops. Okay. Without these services, I could have lost my home. I could have missed out on crisis services, and I likely wouldn't have a job. In addition, I saw my psychiatrist once a month, my therapist every week, my adult rehabilitative mental health worker, which is called ARMS, once a week. And finally, I got electroconvulsive therapy, which is an outpatient procedure. They give you 2 blood pressure cups, an IV, and they give you a headache preventative as well as the stuff that puts you under, which I can't think of the word. That's a symptom of mine. And then they were putting heart monitors, a couple things in my head. I laid back, and it was done. Later, I read the files and found out that they're giving me basically a seizure to break apart the neurons that aren't working, and hopefully they grow back together, which in my case, they did. The procedure itself was 35 to 40 seconds. I was also appointed to our local Adult Mental Health Initiative to serve on our advisory committee, as well as our decision-making joint powers board, which helped me remember me that I was competent. I gained my confidence, and I realized that I was able to use my life experiences as I had before in a setting that made me feel like I really could contribute to society. I am involved for 10 years. It has been life-changing for me. One of the things that I struggle with as we work with budgets is we don't have enough money. I think the thing that I worry about the most is that there are people out there struggling who aren't getting the services they need. With our funding, our growing population has impacted the dollars we spend. We don't even get a cost of living increase. We've had the COVID, which has increased need incredibly, and we don't have the dollars to meet those needs. I urge you to please, please increase our funding for AMHIs statewide. I not only ask for myself, but for the thousands of Minnesotans who are in need of these services. Some are worried about how our dollars are spent, being as inflexible. All unduplicated expenditures are reported to DHS, to the Minnesota Health Information Center, as well as the Social Service Information System. Our initiative itself also does auditing of different providers, and in fact, there have been times that some of our providers were not meeting those needs, and we've changed providers. The data for our Community Adult Mental Health Center in Central Minnesota shows that we receive $2.99 a year per capita. We need more. We need your help to increase our funding. I'm a success story. My journey has had its ups and downs, but I'm living in recovery now. I'm healthier today than I've been since I got sick, and I've been able to see that there are things that I can do and I can't do, but I've been able to compensate for those things. I even took an 8-week workshop, a professional comedy workshop, to hone my skills. I now do stand-up using my very funny material for my mental health journey. It educates and makes people comfortable enough to laugh. I also do community public speaking in my area, as well as public speaking for NAMI Minnesota to law enforcement, as well as other groups. My Adult Mental Health Initiative helped save my life, and I'm so, so grateful. I strongly encourage you to increase our funding. We can help so many more people struggling to live with mental illness. Thank you, Chair, committee members, and Representative Ryer for authoring this bill. And thank you for listening to my story.
Thank you, Ms. Long, for that testimony and sharing your story with our committee. Really appreciate it and all the work you're doing advocating for increased funding.
Thank you.
And also, I'm hearing some feedback. Okay, I think it's resolved. But anyway, thank you also for, you know, talking about your experience and making health, mental health issues more public so others feel comfortable seeking help and treatment. We'll go to questions. I'm seeing Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill today. And also thank you for the testifiers. Ms. Long, I hope I get a chance to hear your stand-up comedy at some point, so thank you for sharing your story. I just want to share a little impact story from Otter Tail County that I've heard, I think, just underscores some of the importance of this funding. We have a nonprofit provider in Fergus Falls that receives about $100,000 per year in AMHI funding. And just this last year in 2020, even with everything going on with COVID, they were able to serve 154 job seekers that struggle with serious mental illness and serious and persistent mental illness. And they're actually able to help 77 individuals find new jobs. And so I just want to underscore the importance of this funding, and thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill today. The question I had is, I know, you know, the governor's initial budget, I believe, made cuts to these grant proposals. And so I don't know if anyone from DHS would be available to respond to that and just confirm that. And I would just pass along the feedback that I hope the governor reconsiders that as he puts together his updated budget, given the important success stories that we've heard here today.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. And you can find the on the budget change sheets, the realignment of these mental health grants in the governor's original budget. I hope, too, that we see a change in the supplemental now that we don't have the large deficit. And we'll bring DHS forward later if more members have questions about that, Representative Rasmussen. Representative
Excuse
Robbins.
Me, Schultz.
Go ahead, Representative Ryer.
Yeah, if I may, I have data about the underspending, and so I think I could answer that at least at a high level. The main fund, which is like about $35 million, was spent to 99.48% of the grant was spent. There are a couple of small categories that total less than $1.5 million, where one that was $23,000 was at zero. One that was about $835,000 was at 64%. But the large fund was fully spent. I think that, and I hope too that the governor will reconsider, because the data do show that spending was strong, and this was fully and well used and a great resource for all the communities it served.
Thank you, Representative Ryer, for that information. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer, and your testifiers, especially Ms. Long. Really appreciate you taking the time to share your story with us, and congratulations on your great success and how you are using it to help other people. It's super inspiring, so thank you. I had a question for Ms. Ryer or the testifier from DHS. So I looked at the bill, and it's very short. Three lines saying $6 million in each fiscal year for DHS. And the underlying research we got said that there's going to be $300,000 a year for mental and health and culturally specific services, $1 million for the Mental Health Initiative, $4.55 million for housing support grants. And so I just wondered if you could explain where those numbers come from and why it's not in the statute. And I'm particularly, we do a lot with housing supports, which I'm really glad about, but how do you square putting most of the money towards the housing supports and only $1 million per year into these mental health initiatives?
Representative Ryer.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins. I'm going to have to go into the realm of what the assumptions that I've been making and what I've heard is that, you know, some of this is direct about housing, but there are many, many programs, as you pointed out, and there are many gaps amongst the programs, and the gaps are different from place to place across the state. So when you see funds allocated to these different types of services, my expectation for this bill and for this increase is that we'll be able to have even more mortar to connect the pieces, and then that's why you would see them allocated out to different types of services. And I would defer to Ms. Shook about that, if there's anything to add from the deputy director from the county perspective.
Ms. Shook?
Madam Chair, Representative Ryer, I would just reinforce what you said in terms of the work of the adult mental health initiatives is really to do that look at a regional level to identify the gaps and needs and to always be looking for the services that are available and using those first and then using these AMHI funds to fill in those remaining gaps and needs. So certainly as other housing supports and resources are available in a local community, those would be used and then this funding would be used to fund various gaps and needs that continue to exist in the continuum. But it's very powerful to have that planning happen at the regional level to be able to be really responsive to the individual community's needs and resources and strengths and bringing that voice of many different partners to the table to help inform that decision-making process, including that voice of lived experience, which Ms. Long has so thoughtfully shared today.
Thank you, Ms. Shook. Representative Robbins?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Hope you're muted.
I'm still not 100% comfortable with why none of that is in statute. And also, I just wondered, everyone keeps saying that it's just all this funding is distributed regionally. Will it go to existing pilot projects that are out there? Because that's not specified in the bill, or will it go to new ones? And is it a certain amount per county, or is it based on population? How is it distributed regionally?
Representative Ryer, do you want me to hand this to DHS?
Absolutely. Please, thank you.
Who from DHS? Mr. Burdick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. To your question, Representative Robbins, so the statute that is cross-referenced in the bill, 245.4661, outlines all the various types of services that this funding can be spent on. And as Ms. Shug talked about, the way this is allocated is that the various regions, these adult mental health initiatives, they do a needs assessment of their local needs, and then they submit a plan to DHS. The current way the funding formula works is based on some historical information from when these were first created, and we've been working collaboratively with the counties on updating that, but that's a future problem. So with this funding, we would look at our current distributions that go to the various AMHIs and then distribute whatever available funding is appropriated by the legislature proportionally using our existing allocations.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. Representative Robbins.
Thank you.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to everyone. Representative Ryer, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I'm reminded of a visit that we participated in at the Zumbro Valley Mental Health Pilot a few years ago, and just how impressed I was with the emphasis on the care that was provided to the residents there. I do note that in the bill, a little over $4.5 million is appropriated for housing support grants, and with Mr. Burdick's explanation, part of it, my question was answered by his response. I'm wondering if you could parlay that in terms of, it's an open-ended question, but what does that really buy us? And welcome your response to that question.
Representative Breyer?
I'd like to defer again to Mr. Burdick, please, Madam Chair.
Mr. Burdick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would actually defer that to our county partners. As I said, they're the ones that really develop the plan for their region. And so each, the way this is going to look in each AMHI is really going to be different based on the needs assessment of that local community. And that might change year to year based as those needs evolve. So I defer to Ms. Shug on that.
Ms. Shug?
Madam Chair, I would say that as Matt said, the needs would be determined by that local needs assessment. And then as was referenced, that plan for addressing those needs is approved by DHS. And then that the the services that are delivered have a reporting component where we're reporting out based on the type of service, the number of people that we're serving, the impact of that service. So depending on the service, the number of people served or the types of services that would be delivered would be different, but based on the local needs. But that information would be then put into our system so that we can report on that by region.
Thank you, Ms. Shug. And members, in your portfolio of documents also posted on our website, there are two good documents that talk about the list of potential services that counties may provide and use these funds. So I would encourage you to look through that, those two documents. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a final follow-up for whomever wants to ping-pong this one. Is there a cap on each grant afforded based upon the applications brought in, or is it on a first-come, first-served basis? And I'll conclude with that.
Mr. Burdick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Albright, there is a specific allocation that goes to each of the 19 AMHIs, and that's based on the total pot of money available. So if this bill were to expand the available funding, each AMHI's allocation would increase proportionally, but each region does have a discrete set of funding. It's not a forecasted entitlement.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. Representative Liebling.
All right, well, thank you. Like everyone else, I add my thanks to Ms. Long. Very congratulations on your recovery and your efforts, and thanks for your testimony today. So a couple of things. I had wanted to ask a similar question to what's been asked, kind of how you arrived at the request amount. And I guess Ms. Shug is probably, I would just maybe ask her if she can respond. And kind of along with that is whether that's a scalable amount of money. So if we have less available, but we're able to do something, is that also helpful? I'm kind of assuming that the answer is yes, but just wanted to get a sense of how you arrived at the number that you've got before us. And I've been looking at the statute here while I've been waiting, and if any of you care to do that, it's very instructive and kind of answers some of these questions. It has a list of potential services in it. You know, I mean, I think this is really important stuff we're doing here. I also, before we go to the answer to my question, I just wanted to also make a comment about, there was a comment before about the governor cutting the budget. And, you know, I just want to say that the governor has the disadvantage of having to go first. And just so everybody's really clear, when the governor put forward his initial budget, he had to deal with a budget deficit. And so when you have a budget deficit, which is, you know, that you have to put forward a budget that meets the deficit, you have to make some very hard choices. So, you know, some of the choices that were made in the initial budget were ones that nobody wanted to make, but you have to meet your responsibilities under the law also. So I just want to put that out there that we are extremely fortunate that we're not in a budget deficit situation now. However, there are always trade-offs. So, you know, it's especially for members who haven't been through this process before, it's really easy to say, oh, you know, why are you not wanting to do this other thing? We'll see if members are willing to, you know, I've observed over my years in the legislature that a lot of members want to spend the money, but are not willing to raise it. So, you know, I think it would behoove us all to, you know, focus on the issues before us here and which things are going to merit our limited resources, because our resources are always going to be very limited considering what the needs and the requests are. So just wanted to put that out there, but I would really like to hear kind of what's behind the number that's been requested.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Ms. Shug, do you have the answer to why $6 million and whether this is scalable?
Madam Chair, I would defer to Representative Ryer for information on the total amount. But what I would say is, as we've described, the needs are great right now and the unmet needs are great. And already the mental health system is incredibly stressed and even prior to COVID really struggles to meet all of the needs that we see in our communities. And so I think that, you know, any amount of funding is important in terms of increasing and our ability to meet that response. But in terms of the overall figure that's in the bill, I would defer to Representative Ryer for that.
Representative Ryer?
I think the term was either popcorn or, thank you, Madam Chair, the term was either popcorn or ping pong. And from my point of view, I'll answer the second part. Amount certainly is scalable. Anything that we are able to provide for these important services will be helpful, and perhaps DHS can speak to the amount. I would just, again, speculate that it's driven by a needs assessment, as I found them to be thoughtful in the figures they bring forward, but I can't speak to its exact creation.
Mr. Burdick?
Madam Chair, I don't know that we can speak to the amount requested in this bill. This is not something we've brought forward, so I defer to the counties on that.
Okay, well, I will say that we're hoping to get federal money from the stimulus bill for behavioral health and mental health issues. So this, we could be hopefully leveraging federal funds for these programs. Okay, Chair Liebling, did you have a follow-up?
No, that's great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Ryer. I certainly support the bill and recognize the enormous importance of mental health and counseling, not only during these days, but through our lives. But I am concerned about the absence or maybe less support than we might get through private health plans, whether it's Health Partners or Allina or Blue Cross Blue Shield. Maybe Representative Ryer or perhaps Ms. Shugie could talk about the relationship between those private plans and the county, and when the county can depend on, or when an individual can depend on their private plan, and when they have to go to the county for help.
Ms. Shugie?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Sandell. We, as the health plans, are an important partner within our Adult Mental Health Initiative continuum and partnership, and very much are at the table to work with us in terms of addressing the needs of people in our communities. I think one of the things that it's important to point out in terms of how these funds are used to meet, to address gaps in needs, is that they really fill a gap in terms of a lot of services in our continuum that aren't funded through healthcare services, that don't fall within that kind of healthcare benefit set, and aren't traditionally reimbursable through those sources. So, for example, outreach activities and education, and, you know, those services that often really support a person to access those services that will eventually be a service that's funded through their health plan, are really important. Kind of needs and gaps that this particular funding is really important in addressing. So certainly the health plans are at the table, our great partners are working with us on these issues. But in terms of kind of their role in funding some of these services, this is really part of what is really important about these more flexible funds, to be able to fill some of those gaps that aren't part of the health plan benefit set, but are a really important part of getting people to those services. We know that it's an incredibly complex system that people are navigating, and the services of the AMHI help people to bridge to those other services, such as health plan services. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shug. Representative Sandell.
Thank you. As I listened to Ms. Long's testimony, I recognized that there were some activities and some services that were provided for her that might have come from health plans, but I do recognize how important some of the other services that she was able to access and have been important in her life. So thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Ryer. Nice job.
Thank you. Thank you. It looks like Mr. Freeman wants to contribute. Go ahead.
Yeah,
introduce yourself to the committee, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt Freeman, Executive Director at MAXA. To answer the question about where that number, that $6 million came from, as MAXA had discussions about investments in the AMHI regional block grants, the amount we came to is about $1 per person or 20% of the current grant allocation. And so that number came about to that $6 million figure. So that's where that number came from. Again, we would be supportive of increased dollars of a different amount, but we felt that was an appropriate balance of being able to expand those dollars and still prioritize and use them most effectively.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. And were you here just to answer questions or did you need to testify as well?
I am testifying on a later bill, Madam Chair. Okay. So I just wanted to offer, since I was here and able to answer the question.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Freeman. We have Elizabeth Emerson. I'm not sure if you were here to testify or to answer questions on this bill. Are you with us?
Madam Chair, I believe she was here to answer questions as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Freeman. Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions. So members, House File 1600. Will be laid out for possible inclusion. Ms. Representative Ryer, do you have a quick closing comment?
Just very quickly, I want to advocate once more for the value of this funding to help pull the pieces together so that each region of the state across our state can have their unique needs met and all of our people can be sufficiently cared for. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryer, and thank you, testifiers, for this bill. Appreciate it. So again, members, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. The next item on our agenda is House File 1495. Chair Fisher, would you like to move the division report from Behavioral Health?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the division report from Behavioral Health Division on House File 1495.
Thank you. Representative Chair Fisher moves the division report. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the division report is approved. Okay, to House File 1495, and members, this will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. And I see, Chair Fisher, that you have an A2 amendment. Would you like to quickly describe the A2 amendment and then adopt it?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment. This is an amendment that's mostly technical, to resolve some technical things, and there's a little bit that was provided by stakeholders that needed some clarification, and that's what this amendment does.
Okay. Chair Fisher moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails, and the A2 amendment is adopted. Members, this bill, I believe, was discussed in three committee hearings of Chair Fisher's Behavioral Health Division, so it's had extensive review and discussion and improvement, and it has bipartisan support. So we are not going to spend a lot of time on this bill, even though it's a lot of pages. Chair Fisher's going to describe the bill. We're going to take some testimony and some information from DHS, and then we're going to maybe take one or two questions and then lay it over. So, Chair Fisher, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and the committee for the opportunity to present House File 1495. And I also want to thank my co-authors, Representative Frankie and Representative Vang, for their help and support on this bill. While it's been alluded to as being a large bill and something that has been long needed here in the state, it's over 255 pages, including repealers. And what it is, it's restructuring our mental health rules and statutes that date back to the 1950s. And what we're doing is creating a uniform standards. It represents several years of work with DHS, providers, advocates, nonprofits, et cetera. And the bill does a lot of cleaning up of language, providing consistency, updates to current practices, and will also reduce the number of variances that have to be given out by the department right now. Some of the areas that it addresses is, example, Rule 36, which deals with ERTs. There are very few specifics in that rule, and as a result, there was too much left open to interpretation. And as a result, as time went through, his interpretations would go from one end of the spectrum to the other. And so it was really important that this was clarified so that we could eliminate those kind of interpretations out there. That's one example. Another one is we've had a big growth of community behavioral health clinics. There's a lot of work that's been done, but there's still more work to be done. So while this is a large bill, it does not cover everything that is out there. So this is going to be a bill that's going to need continued engagement by stakeholders of the department as we go forward. Some examples of other things that we had issues with is, as an example, in mental health professional, it appeared 47 different times across different rules and regulations, and in at least 10 of those instances, there were omissions or errors that were in there because it was spread out in too many errors. So these are some examples of some of the things that are being corrected as we go through with this bill. This bill moves processes from being a paperwork, making sure the I's are dotted and T's crossed, to a client focus. Too often when clients who are in crisis with a behavioral health issue or substance use issue, they would come in and there were all these questions that had to be answered. And the way it was laid out in statute and rules is, well, before I can help you, and I know you've got a problem, I've got to ask you all these questions here. And those questions could take a couple of sessions. And so what we're doing is now going to it being client-centered is when it comes in is we will still get these questions answered, but the main focus when a person first comes in is finding out what their issues are, where and meeting them where they're at, and then giving time to be able to ask those questions, to be able to get that information worked out. And that is critical. If we're going to be successful in the behavioral health issue area, it's making sure we're meeting people where they're at. And this really does a lot of work. It has the support of many different organizations. I know that there was a letter provided from some of them, but as I mentioned, there's still more work to be done. And as an example of that, on page 69 of the bill, there's actually a direct call out to the commissioner to continue work in the single comprehensive license structure. There's still a lot more work to be done in that area, as there are of other sections of the bill. The other big area that we have is this does have a fiscal note for it. The fiscal note is calling for about $241,000 this year, about $257,000 in future year and in the following year. And a lot of this work is needed to, number one, continue some of the work that I've mentioned here. Some of this money is to make sure that we've got the time to implement things. As we're going through, and as you can see, consolidating and adding clarification, it's going to take time for staff to go out and reach out to the providers to make sure that we're not missing anything, making sure that we're providing the, and we're providing time so that people can go out and educate the people being licensed, people who are carrying out the rules. Top priority will be helping providers understand and comply with client rights under the new residential discharge areas. Another area is FTE and the CCRI division. To help ensure transparency of decision-making relating to the uniform standards projects and to work to avoid unintended consequences by making sure we've got meaningful engagement and partnering with the community throughout the implementation of this proposal. And when you've got something this large and a lot of the overhaul being done, it's going to take extra work, some of it temporary work, to make sure that we're providing the communication, education, holding the hands of the providers and the people, the clients, to make sure that everything is being carried out and making sure to provide the feedback so that when we have areas that need more work, we're getting that back to us so that we can make the changes that are needed and expressed by the clients, providers, and EHS. And for that, I will pause. I've got a couple of testifiers here who can go more into the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. We have Ben Ashley Wortman from DHS. I'm not sure if they want to add more information to what Chair Fisher had to say. Otherwise, we'll go to the testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'll just give a brief overview of the project and how we've gotten here. I think it's helpful to understand.
Please introduce yourself and your title.
I'm sorry. My name is Ben Ashley Wortman with the Department of Human Services. In 2017, we got asked by providers to do something about excessive paperwork in mental health services. And since then, stakeholders have been continued to be at the heart of USS. We asked people to join monthly half-day-long meetings to shape the priorities and solutions proposed in this bill, more than double the number we could fit in the room, and this was before COVID. Volunteered. We've done WebEx walkthroughs of the bill that took hours, several hundred people attended, and there have been compromises. There's work that remains, but we are where we are today because people stepped up to help create something better. We're immensely grateful for that. This work has had three major goals. The first is pruning away requirements that don't add value while clarifying those that remain. this is our moment to reinforce the foundation of our services, consolidate the gains that we've made over the past decades, and prepare for more integrated care in the future. One thing that we've done is try to consider whether or not our regulations do what we want them to do. We've heard consistently about the burnout and loss of talented people in the field due to the hectic pace of approving treatment plans the same day that services were performed. A 5-day grace period that we proposed will give professionals a chance to work with their trainees to improve the documentation, not be checking their EMRs at all hours or dragging their laptops to the beach. We need people to join and to stay in the workforce, and avoiding unnecessary burnout is a major factor in doing that. Second, we want to improve equitable access to care. All care should be person and family centered, but the assumptions we make in our regulations work better for some than for others. The diagnostic assessment that Representative Fisher mentioned determines what condition a person has and how it might be treated. These are important items, but we heard from especially providers working with underserved communities. A tribal provider telling me, we absolutely can blend our culture into mental health care, but we don't talk like this. Asking certain questions too soon, particularly to an elder, the person would well be likely to disengage from care. A provider with the rare ability to perform diagnostic assessments in the Karen language spoke to the issue of asking about trauma in the first visit, as refugees, her clients definitionally had trauma, but there's no word for that in the Karen language. So even without translation, there was no way to get to understanding and trust in the first visit. More time and flexibility is humane. It's more accurate. It's better practice for reaching across cultures. Finally, we want to work towards a single unified review process, streamlining the work for providers and DHS. We need the right legal authority to address bad actors, but much more than that, we need a good process for everyone else. Licensing encompasses SUD, childcare, residential facilities. These same providers are also operating. When the work of approving services is organized into a single area, it opens up significant possibilities for providers. Reviews conducted across program areas to minimize repeated visits, consistency in feedback, and clarity of expectations. And as mentioned, this is going to be a process. Simply moving everything at once would be extremely disruptive and hard to get right. So this year, we codify the longstanding IRTS residential crisis standards. The discharge standards are a new and important addition here. And since this is the Finance Committee, I will note that this is an important part of our ask. We already get many complaints in this area, but we do not have clear standards to enforce on discharge from IRTS. Having staff to resolve these complaints and support providers in proactive compliance is going to be critical for a successful implementation. We significantly propose to modernize Rule 29, the optional outpatient mental health certification standard. We combine children and adult crisis into one overall set of standards, calling out specifically the ways in which children, families, and support networks are part of crisis response. And for other services certified by the Behavioral Health Division, we adopt common definitions and standards but don't yet shift them under 245A and licensing. The language outline handout that we've provided the committee has a 10,000-foot view of the proposal with a little more detail than I've given today, but we're happy to dive further into detail in any area where there are questions or concerns. The language you see today has been coalescing over the past 4 years, refined by round after round of stakeholder input and discussion. There are more steps we'll need to take, but we are ready to take this one. Providers need the simplicity and flexibility, and people need services focused on meeting them where they are. With that, I'd like to hand it to Ginny Palin from MACMAP, who can speak to the experience of providers participating in the USS process.
Thank you for that testimony. We have Ginny Palin. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Ginny Palin. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs, or MACMA. We are a statewide association of 34 community-based behavioral health providers, including the state's CCBHCs and the majority of the state's designated community mental health centers. I'm here to share some of our providers' perspective on the value of moving into this unified licensing framework. under the current system, as was said, providers have to spend a lot of time tracking down various parts of statute, rules, and variances to determine which regulations apply to which mental health services. They also have to try to interpret those at times confusing regulations, and then spend time following up with regulatory agencies on how to proceed when those regulations are in conflict with each other. This is all time spent away from providers being able to deliver high-quality mental health services to our clients. Our hope is that by moving to a unified licensing framework for mental health services, providers will have more transparent and uniform standards across the system to operate within. They'll have clearer accountability across all of the partners in the mental health service continuum. These include our service providers, our county, and our state agencies. There will also be greater transparency and consistency and guidance given to providers, and the ability to have a better system to support all of our overall goals of increasing access to high-quality mental health services for our patients and for Minnesotans. One example that was referred to here earlier is the change to the certified mental health clinics certification. This is currently the Rule 29 certification, and under those current requirements, there's a lot of time-consuming and administrative burden as part of that process. It's all, again, time taken away from being able to provide services and good care to our client populations. With the USS proposal, we believe it is a good step toward aligning certification and operating standards for certified mental health care providers currently under Rule 29. We believe it will streamline and update the comprehensive set of care provided by mental health clinics. Some examples here include offering clinics the ability to tailor quality assurance and improvement to their specific needs, and flexibility in maintaining staffing across numerous different sites of one agency while we're in this workforce shortage era. As Chair Fisher and the department mentioned, this is a first step in reform. We look forward to next steps into further refining and defining community mental health care services and working towards streamlining the administrative requirements and regulatory reviews within their scope and care. I would just like to reiterate that this has been a collaborative process over the past 2 years between the department, between providers, and between some of our mental health advocates. And we look forward to continued collaboration as this bill continues to be revised and moves through the legislative process, both this year and in future years. Thank you.
Thank you. So members, like I said, well, I'll take two questions on this topic. Since there was so much work done in our division and there was great discussion. I really appreciate Chair Fisher and his members taking three hearings to discuss this bill and get an overview. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Fisher. From my colleagues who serve on your committee, I've heard that this is a really good bill and a lot of good work has gone into it, so thank you. My question is probably for DHS, unless Representative Fisher can answer it, but I know that this impacts residential crisis stabilization licensure, and I was wondering if you could speak to how it impacts those crisis stabilization units that operate under the adult foster care license and if those providers have been consulted with as a part of this process. And the reason I ask is, you know, to the best of my knowledge, there are only two in the state, and they're actually, you know, quite small where they don't have lobbyists that are kind of tracking these types of processes at the Capitol. So just want to make sure that we got their input on this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Chair DHS. Fisher or Mr. Ashley Wortman?
DHS, please.
Yes, Mr. Ashley Wortman, please.
Thank you. That is a good question. Well, we do have some revisions to the overall crisis standards that will impact those, I believe, yes, two providers that are adult foster care licensed. Those pieces are relatively minor. The more substantive changes in crisis are going to be on either the mobile crisis side or the residential crisis that is operated within an IRF setting. They are not changing their licensure. They're still going to be under the adult foster care. That's something where I think we would need further discussion in later years. If they wanted to move under that collective same licensing umbrella, in prior conversations, particularly with Productive Alternatives, I think they've been very proud and content with some of the ways in which they've been able to take that niche and really make it their own model of service. So we're not upsetting that apple cart.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen, follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, and I very much appreciate that response, and I'll just be following up just to make sure we get them connected with this process. But thank you for all the good work, Representative Fisher.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author of the bill, Representative Fisher, my good friend, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I was going to ask you a question with regard to a provision on page 197, but I will belabor that point as he and I have a technical mind on those things. This is a good bill, members. It's been undertaken for a number of years. I was made aware of it some time ago. I certainly applaud Representative Fisher for his tenacity in bringing it forward to the committee. That being said, Madam Chair, I do want to just remind you that despite the hard work that was done in behavioral health and on Representative Fisher's committee as chair, but as ranking member on this committee, I think it's important that we are afforded the time to ask the questions. Despite the rigorous nature of his committee, I think it's incumbent upon us to also hold this bill up to our own rigorous standards before we move it forward. Just as a reminder, not as a criticism, but we do owe our own constituents and this committee the same nature of vetting bills as has been done in division. So, again, thank you, Representative Fisher, for the work that you've done.
Okay, members, I'm not seeing any more questions. With that, House File 1495 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion. Any closing comment, Chair Fisher?
Thank you, Chair Schultz. Thank you, committee, for the opportunity to present this bill. It's to streamline, clarify, and supply the work that is done out there to help our citizens who are dealing with mental health issues. And I look forward to continued input. And more importantly, I look forward to continued work that everybody will be doing in the future years to continue to move forward the issues that are not covered in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and members. The next item for consideration is House File 944. Let's see, Representative. Go ahead, Representative Albright.
Thank you. Did you confirm your motion to lay this bill over for possible inclusion?
This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. I did before the closing comments as amended, House File 1495. And it's an action, it's not a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, moving on. House File 944. Representative Hansen, would you like to adopt the division report, or would you like to move to adopt the division report from Behavioral Health?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen moves to adopt the division report from Behavioral Health for House File 944. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. House File 944 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance bill, and it has been extensively discussed in our division. But Representative Hansen, please inform the committee about House File 944.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also like to just take a second to thank Senator Nelson for carrying this companion bill in the Senate before we get started here. Members, this bill addresses a complex issue and is a work in progress, and I appreciate you taking the time to hear more about this and bearing with me through the complexity of it. I will provide an overview and brief history, and then I will turn it over to Sue Abderholden with NAMI to share more about why this bill is so important and to share more about the innovative developments starting from ongoing conversations with stakeholders. Each year, approximately 700 children enter voluntary placements through Chapter 260D to receive mental health care at residential treatment facilities. Today's bill essentially treats mental health treatment in a residential facility like it would any other health condition or any other level of mental health care. It would be based on medical necessity, and the state would pay for room and board costs for children who otherwise would have to use Title IV dollars. For children in voluntary placements, the Title IV reimbursed counties about $2.1 million. And here's some background. Our children's residential mental health treatment system has been through several major changes. Back in 2001, CMS allowed counties and federal Medicaid dollars to be used to pay for the costs of children's residential facilities. The portion of the costs associated with mental health treatment was not covered by federal Medicaid dollars and was the responsibility of the county. In a similar way, counties were also responsible for the cost of room and board and sought reimbursement through Title IV funds for youth whose families met the program's income requirements. This funding mechanism was negotiated as the state was working to more fully optimize its ability to capture federal dollars through Medicaid. It was a benefit to counties as youth in foster care through child welfare were always eligible for Medicaid, and this approach helped counties better optimize reimbursement. Since 2009, state and federal Medicaid funds have covered the treatment component of mental health residential placements for children enrolled in PMAPs, while the counties continued to be responsible for the room and board costs. Then in 2007, DHS, the State Court Administration, children's providers, and advocates came together and put in the work to develop a new chapter of law, which is 260D. This allowed for voluntary placements for children. The new law made clear that parents retained decision-making for their child and they did not have to go to court, although the papers still had to be filed. This created a, quote, separate door, if you will, for families whose children needed treatment due to their mental illness. This way, it did not feel like the family was going through the child protection door to receive the services. And then the Family First Bill was passed in Congress in 2018. Essentially, Family First removed that second door and required everyone to go through the child welfare door because we're using child welfare funding. Now, it's important to note that CMS decided in 2018 that these children's facilities were IMDs, and so the state couldn't use Medicaid dollars anymore. The legislature then appropriated money to fill in for the lost Medicaid dollars. What we're asking for in this bill is for the state to fill in the loss of these Title IV funds so that families do not have to go through the child welfare door to receive services. We know that we have not quite figured out how to ensure that counties have a role when they are using their funding, but we are actively working on that with stakeholders. You will hear testimony with concerns about this bill's complexity, and I encourage stakeholders and interested parties who are listening or participating in this hearing today to continue to participate in conversations and propose solutions to help solve this issue that's impacting about 700 children a year. Ultimately, I think we can all agree that families should not be put through a child protection channel when they are simply seeking help for their child. Despite the complexity of solving the issue, it's my belief that it is incumbent on us to work hard and find the best solution available. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Sue Abderholden from NAMI to share why this is so important.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Ms. Abderholden. Welcome to the committee or returning to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. Last year, when the legislature heard the department's bill to implement Family First, NAMI vigorously opposed it. We didn't want parents of children with serious mental illnesses to go fully through the child protection door. You directed DHS to meet with stakeholders to see if there was another way. We did meet, but no bill came out of that. If you look at how we fund services for children with mental illnesses, you'll see if they go to a hospital, we look at medical necessity, no matter what insurance is used. If they're going to a psychiatric residential treatment facility, we look at medical necessity. If you're going to residential treatment and you have private insurance, we look at medical necessity. But if you're using Medicaid or Title IV dollars, you actually go through the county. And so we're not really looking at medical necessity in the same way. I want you to understand how hard it is to be a parent of a child with a serious mental illness. It's exhausting for them. They're trying to, you know, keep their child from hurting themselves or others. They're desperately trying to find a hospital bed. I just talked to a mom today whose son has been in the ER for 7 days. They're trying to find in-home therapists, right, or in-home care. They might have other children, perhaps a job, and they just feel like they can't keep all the balls in the air. And then you finally decide with the help of a mental health professional that your child needs residential treatment, and then you find out you have to go through child welfare. This really scares parents. They are so afraid of being judged when they've done the best that they can, but this is extreme parenting. And by the time they reach this point, they're an emotional and physical wreck. And now someone who might not be a mental health professional is going to send a letter out to all of the child's relatives to see if they will care for them. People you don't know are going to gather around a table and decide your child's treatment fate. We asked families what they thought about the county reaching out to all their relatives, and here are some of their quotes. This is infuriating. Would they ask a relative to care for my child with cancer, heart disease, or diabetes? I would not support this. In our case, we did not have any relatives who could monitor our daughter for self-harm and suicidal attempts 24 hours a day. Absolutely not. The presumption is that the problem is bad parenting skills rather than a child in need of specialized care. Residential treatment is completely different than a sleepover at a relative's house. These kids need professional help, not babysitting. And my favorite comment, no. So when we tried to come up with a solution, first we looked at how do you cover the county's loss of $4E dollars if we create a separate path. And so that's the bill that you really have in front of you. The more that we dug into this, we realized that we really have three doors. And somehow we've mixed them all up. So we have what's called Chapter 245, which is the Children's Mental Health Act. Unfortunately, we put mention of Child Protection 260C and the Voluntary Placement 260D in that chapter last year. If we took those out, you have a separate path now for children with serious mental illnesses who need residential treatment because there's already the screening tool that they would use. But we would need to remove all the references to 260C. If a child really needs to go into child protection, you wouldn't go through the Children's Mental Health Act. You would go directly to 260C. 260D is the voluntary placement, which is somewhat now connected to the Children's Mental Health Act as well. But I think if we separate all of those, we will have three different paths. I know this gets kind of complicated, but honestly, we have to figure this out. We cannot force families through this door. It just isn't fair. And, you know, we have a draft amendment that we have sent to the department and to the counties last week and to Aspire. We are very willing to continue to work on this. I think actually we're pretty close, but I really appreciate the committee's time this morning, you know, even though it's not, you know, totally finished bill. But I think we're close to figuring out a solution. And as Representative Hansen said, I think if people can please just come to the table and let's figure this out. But we honestly, families are so upset about having to go through this. I just don't think it's right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden, and thank you for your continued work on this bill. We don't have a complete fiscal note yet, and we can, so we look forward to seeing what that would be. I think there's been estimates of around $3 million, the state share per year. And we'll go to our next testifier, Mr. Freeman. Please introduce yourself to the committee and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt Freeman, Executive Director at MACSA, the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. MACSA, again, represents human service directors across all 87 counties. MACSA, similar to NAMI, also participated in the QRTP work group directed by the legislature and conducted by DHS that met last year, tasked with considering how to address voluntary placements under new Family First construct. Unfortunately, the work of that committee didn't evolve in such a way that it gave an opportunity to fully consider an alternative pathway for voluntary placements outside of Family First. We did include some comments on that in our comments to the report. And while we were not a part of the initial discussions with NAMI on the bill, we have met with them since and expressed some of our concerns and are committed to continuing to work with them to address the concerns and find the right solutions for children and for families to be served. Counties recognize that advocacy agencies and individuals have legitimate concerns about some of the requirements within Family First for youth being placed voluntarily in residential treatment, and at the same time still have remaining concerns and reservations about developing another pathway or at least addressing some of the concerns related to developing that pathway. That includes looking at duplication of protocols that would need to be implemented on the local level, considering and the funding sources and the infrastructure needed to accommodate that proposal, ensuring protections for youth in placement continue, and again, mirroring the concerns from Ms. Abderholden, a desire to support parents' rights to be able to advocate for the needs of their kids. And I think we do have some common ground in this work, looking at the best interests of the child, finding the appropriate level of treatment, find the right service, the right time, the right dosage and also ensuring that there's protection for families so they can advocate, parents can advocate for the needs of their children, and also help prepare families for the return of the child after they're in placement. To highlight a couple of those concerns, again, one of our common goals is that we're not interested in a system that has a opportunity for children to languish in care. We want to make sure that they get the treatment that they need, but also recognize there are other ways to meet children's need beyond residential treatment. And outcomes that we see are often best when children receive support in the community, but also recognize that these intensive in-home services are lacking in our community now. And know that folks gravitate towards residential placements and understand that they're appropriate in settings, but want to make sure that we're also considering the most appropriate setting, the least restrictive setting, and that there are benefits to remaining with family and community when that is possible and when the appropriate supports are there. So Family First builds in some of those reports, but we do think that, that again, they go further than could. For voluntary placements, they go further than NAMI and others feel comfortable, and think that 260D and the voluntary placements and the protections found within that section, some of those would be best applied to this new proposal as well. Without bringing those concerning aspects, we think we can ensure that children are only away from their homes when it's in their best interest, and working together on something like a screening process that we've been discussing with NAMI, and collaborating on that right placement, I think is able to find that right middle ground. We also know that families, when they're placing an individual in residential placements, also oftentimes have trauma from significant mental health experiences, and it's important to help them heal and be able to support that family so that the child is able to effectively return home, and that those services are things that we need to build out and infrastructure that we need to invest in. And again, towards the goal of avoiding kids languishing in care that I think we all agree on, we think a review process of the placement or evaluating the appropriateness of the child's status in placement is a really important aspect of the law too. We have raised that with NAMI and will continue to work with them on that, knowing that families may not have recovered from the trauma of incidents related to mental health crisis. There may be times when the family is not yet ready to bring the child back, but the child has progressed and stabilized, and trying to figure out what is the outcome in the process in those type of situations is important for the protection and taking action in the best interest of the child. So counties will continue to work on trying to clarify what is the county role in this process, particularly looking at case management role, how the discharge transition planning to community-based supports is done in this so that we're continuing to support that family and that child. Again, as Ms. Abderholden and Representative Hansen have said, figuring out the right funding structure and the process to cover the cost for families and for counties, and considering those families as well that aren't on MA but aren't covered by private insurance continues to be a concern. And we also want to make sure that we know that our system has a challenge in finding all the right and most appropriate placements right now for folks throughout the process. And so finding that appropriate placement is important in a voluntary placement as well as the other needs for children seeking mental health support in residential facilities. And so needing to continue to invest and emphasize on finding that right focus for the interventions to support a parent's needs is something that we need to work on across our full system. So we remain committed to working with Ms. Abderholden and NAMI on these concerns and thank them for their openness. And we'll continue to advocate for, I think, hopefully solutions that can best meet our needs with the significant change coming next fall. Thank you, Madam Chair, and happy to take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Members, questions? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess less of a question and more just a comment. I've had the chance to interact with Representative Hansen some on this bill. I'm really grateful to her for putting so much work into it. And I guess I'll just note for all of us, I know Mr. Freeman and Max are really interested in working productively on this. And boy, it just seems to me absolutely critical that we take action on this because I did not know until pretty recently this point that in order for a family to get needed mental health services, they have to then give up custody of their child, and just everything that goes into that just strike me as being unconscionable. And so whatever we need to do to make sure that we make progress on this, I'll just urge everybody involved. And the last piece connected to that, then, is just as Ms. Abderholden was speaking, I hope this is already apparent to everybody on the committee, but I guess it just really newly struck me what incredible resource we have in Ms. Abderholden and in NAMI to have somebody with that level of expertise and credibility. And it seems like this is the kind of bill where you can especially see that. And we're just really lucky to have her. So thank you to the people working on this. And please know that I'd like to do anything I can to be helpful. And I hope that we all do to make progress on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. And I second that. Thank you, Ms. Abderholden, for everything you've done on this bill and so many other bills in the past. We really do appreciate your expertise and bringing people together to work on these tough issues. Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was going to say that too, ditto to that, to what Representative Pinto said. And the question I have, though, I mean, this is there any effort at the federal level to fix this? I mean, I know that's a hard, it's a hard thing to do, but that's one question I have. And then I just wonder if, I mean, we can't be the only state that's wrestling with this, that this was kind of created by the Families First, which in so many ways is good legislation that really moves a lot of things forward. But this is apparently a big gap there. And anything brief you can tell us about that, Ms. Abderholden? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. I was going to ask the exact same question. So, Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Liebling. I have been in frequent conversations with our national office, and Kirsten Anderson from Aspire has done the same, to see if there's a way that we can at least kind of break off these families. In some of the other states, they didn't use Title IV-E dollars. They just used state dollars. And so they aren't in the same situation. You know, Minnesota just loves to go for every federal dollar that we can. And sometimes that's a good thing, but sometimes it adds on complexity and kind of unintended consequences. So what we're trying to do on the federal level is to exempt any residential treatment that fits the QRTPs that are required under the Family First Law by saying that if a child is going in there voluntarily and not through the child protection system, that it is not considered an IMD, an Institute for Mental Disease, so that you could also use Medicaid, and then that could also pay for the room and board, and then we would be free from this. So we're working on it, but they've had kind of other issues in front of them. So we've kind of been pushed off to the side, but we're hoping that it can get some traction in a few months.
And Madam Chair, thank you. And that's really good to know. And so Ms. Abderholden, and to the author, you know, maybe we should build in some language that says that if we get that we can capture that money. And, you know, we've been, right now we're in this situation where we are going to have federal money coming in for a lot of different things, and we're not entirely sure where that's going to fit. So this is something we're kind of overall trying to think about. How do we capture those funds if we do get them? It's just a thought, you know, you can take it for what it's worth. But anyway, that was what I thought of with that answer. And thank you again for all your efforts.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. I'm not seeing any other questions from members. Representative Hansen, thank you for all the work you're doing. And we're happy to work with you on that language that Chair Liebling just suggested. So any closing comments, Representative Hansen?
Madam Chair, I just want to thank members of the committee. I know, like I said, I know this is a complex issue, but at the end of the day, when we boil this down, I think that we know that families who are seeking help for their children, that putting them through this child protection door is just so traumatizing. And making sure that we're aware of the long-term trauma this has. You know, when we think of our youth, our teenagers who hear that they have to go into foster care in order to get help, I mean, that leaves a long-lasting impact on people well into adulthood. If they don't understand that the purpose of doing this is to get it paid for, not that their parents don't want them. And so I just encourage folks to be innovative, think big with us, come to the table. We would love to participate and work with as many folks as we can to help these families and help these kids. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And with that, I want to thank all the testifiers and the work they're doing on this bill. With that, House File 944 is going to be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. So members, I'm not going to try to push us to hear the next bill, and we only have 6 minutes left. So we're going to hear that hopefully tomorrow on the agenda. If it works for the author and the testifiers, I sincerely apologize. We were trying to do too much in this committee hearing, but hopefully we'll get to that Representative Baker's bill, House File 471, tomorrow if that works for the bill author and the testifiers. And members, so for Friday, for tomorrow, we're going to hear a few more bills. Friday, we're going to do a walkthrough of the governor's budget. And then I want you to hold next week. We're going to be meeting when usually the Behavioral Health Division meets. So Wednesday at 8:30, we'll start our hearing and take that committee time and then our committee time if we need to hear bills on next Wednesday. And I believe next Tuesday we might have a floor session, so we may not be meeting, and we'll let you know via email as soon as that is confirmed. So with that, members, thank you for all your time. Thank you for all the bill presentations and the testifiers. And we will see you tomorrow at 10:30. And with that, we are adjourned.